Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is incredible as we bring on Andrew, the creator of Space Boy and the runner of all things Space Bodega, and we cannot be more stoked. This is an incredible design that brings 90s nostalgia into the form of a character and throws it in your face. He will be at DesignerCon, and of course, Toys on Tap is going to be stopping by. If you want to support Toys on Tap in a free way, you can like, subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It helps us grow and it makes you feel good. That's what it really is. It's going to make you feel good to help Toys on Tap. If you want to support the show even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. Episodes of the Nitty Gritty, unboxings, downloads, all that stuff will be on there. $3 a month, you can listen to the episodes of Nitty Gritty. $5 a month, you can see the video interviews. We're working through it. I'm catching up. We're doing what we got to do. If you want to follow along to see what's going on with Toys on Tap, all socials at Toys on Tap, as well as unboxing videos on YouTube at Toys on Tap. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
There we go.
What's up?
What's up, man? Clean. There we go.
Wow, I don't know what you just used on your camera, but it just like cleared up everything. Holy moly.
Literally just a thing to clean it. It just freaking greasy.
Yeah, it went from like foggy to like perfect. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm pumped that you're on today.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Of course. I don't know if you've heard an episode of Toys on Tap, but how it usually works is we kind of interview the artists and we walk it back all the way through childhood and figure out who you are and the toys you had and played with and stuff, and then kind of walk through your whole career as a toy maker.
Fun. Sounds exciting. Yeah.
So I'm pumped. But before we start anything, you got to do me a favor. Introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
So my name is Andrew Pena. And I work in animation. I do like concept art and stuff like that. And but me on my own, I've always done art, and I do music, art and music. That's all I know how to do. Anything else, please don't ask me. I just reading, math, cooking. <How funny.
laughs> I'm intrigued by Space Boy, because he kind of just reminds me a lot of like Steven Universe style.
And
and I really like that style of animation and that style of toy and stuff, so I'm really pumped to talk to you about it. But we got to walk it all the way back. I don't know how old you are, I don't know when you grew up. Tell me about the toys you grew up with and what kind of like started this whole thing towards toys and animation.
So I'm 34 now, so I'm like a clear kid of like late 90s, 2000s, and so I grew up on like Power Ranger toys and Legos and anything Dragon Ball Z because of Toonami. I'm growing up with all that. And I think, I don't know, I've always loved toys and loved making things. I used to do these things when I was a kid where I would take those felt straws or the little bendy straws and I would make things out of it. I remember like clearly, like I would just make a bunch of my own figures because, you know, I could only afford so many toys that my parents didn't want to buy me a lot because we were, you know, we're a hardworking family over here in LA just trying to survive. So I got like one or two toys maybe, or I would get hand-me-downs from my cousins. And so I would make my toys and I would do it out of that, or I would make them out of paper, or just making a lot of different things, or for like even out of clay for like little stop motion stuff once I got my first camera. Yeah. So I've always loved making things. I never thought I'd be making toys, right? This whole thing is so recent, only within like the last three, four years. But so, yeah, so I grew up on that. And then on like Sega Genesis games, Sonic, all of that kind of stuff. That was like, I was obsessed with everything with that. And it's funny you brought up Steven Universe because like they take a lot of their inspiration, whether they know it or not, which I'm sure they do, from Akira Toriyama, all of the Dragon Ball stuff, like the way that Steven, like the like stature of them and the way they run and like the chunkiness of them. I've always loved that. So direct inspiration from me in Space Boy is the way that he's posed, the way that he stands, the way that he's chunky.
Yeah.
I always loved those characters.
What's crazy? You're like telling me my own childhood, one, because I'm 33, so that's interesting.
See, the hard things I'll be saying it should hit you, because that was an era, the good era.
Yeah, it's the best era. And then it's funny talking about those like pipe cleaner things. Every kid at some point finds those and like bends them into weird things and does that. I came across this Instagram account not that long ago where they, whoever it is, makes giant Lego minifigs out of just pipe cleaners.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it's like, it's such a fun, cool design. I mean, to do that and to like, to have that as your base, it makes sense that Space Boy has come from you. Like, at, like the 90s were such a fun time where it was like, if there is inspiration for Steven Universe with Dragon Ball and stuff, awesome. Like, we had the weirdness and all the excitement of like those types of toys and those cartoons. So it's no shock that that kind of like spilled out of you at some point. But how do we get to like art or animation? How do we start dabbling in that stuff as you got older?
So it always was that, like, that kid that was drawing. We always had those kids in school, right? The kids that were drawing in the corner. I was really, really shy, so I just drew a lot.
Yeah.
And it was just for pure fun. And I was lucky in that my parents really, really pushed that. When they saw that I had that creativity, they would push, you know, trying to put me in drawing classes, trying to put me in this, trying to just kind of keep me doing that. Then I diverted, and I got into music. Sorry, that's where I made most of my friends, was in music. So I started doing that, played piano for a very long time, and I kind of diverted there, but I was still making art, because I was, as I got older, I got into a band, and I started making like the artwork for it, like trying to draw t-shirts, trying to draw everything like that. So it was kind of like a constant, you know, like I kind of bounced back between music and art. Wasn't until later where, as all of us ex-emo kids, our bands didn't make it. And then I was like in my mid-20s at that point, when I was like, well, the band's not going to happen. What do I do? And I ended up really diving more into art and finally went to art school mid-20s and started really pushing that, which has kind of got me into art as a career. So yeah, there was that as well.
Tell me about the emo band. Tell me about like the long hair that was in your face that you had to swim out of your face and all that.
The long hair only got cut maybe like 3 months ago. Like I had it still down and color down to here, and it's hard to get out of it. It's not a phase, right? It's not a phase. So
no.
Yeah, I was in a hardcore band. So like the screaming, and I played the keys. So we were more like if you think of like Chiodos, bands like stuff like that, we were more in that realm of like kind of playing around with stuff, and I would scream. I don't know how to do it anymore. I was like, the screaming is gone. I don't remember how I used to scream, but I used to scream and play. And we made two EPs that are somewhere on Spotify with like 5 listeners, and it was a good time. Like that's probably one of my most fun time in my life, was being in that band for like a solid 5 years.
Heck yeah. I mean, those, like, that was every early 2000s kid's like dream, like, hey, I want to start a band. Yeah. Every underground show we went to, every weird like pop-up,
all the house shows, all the house shows that you just wanted to play, just get your set in before the cops broke it up, because we're all still underage. Because I started playing when I was like 15, 16, 17. You go to the house shows. And then when you finally got into your first venue, we were big around like the San Gabriel Valley, like over in West Covina, made our way to LA a little bit. And man, just being able to get on stage and that you had people that would mosh for your music was pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like going to those types of shows and seeing bands like, it was real early on, like Silverstein or like Hawthorne Heights had just started. And then it was like, once they got famous, it was like, oh, they're not hardened. Like, let's go somewhere else and listen to bands like I Catch Fire, weird stuff like that. And it was, that stuff. But yeah, so that's awesome that you did that. And then late, so like mid-20s, you turn and do this whole art school thing. Mm-hmm. What kind of pushes you into that? Like, why choose art school?
Two things. I needed purpose. Because I'm a somebody that like, I need something to work towards. I need a drive. I need like something to do. And I mean, which is really what Facebook came from, but that's further. But like, I needed something to do, and music was done. And I was a piano teacher at the time. I was trying to see if maybe I could work in music, but I kind of learned that I don't like when people tell me what to do with music, like at all. So trying to do scores, trying to do this, trying to work with people. Like my band was different. They're like family, but like trying to do it for work. Like I just like an audio engineer, something like that. I didn't take direction well at all. So I was like, all right, well, I can't do music for work because I'm like a stubborn dude with that. So the only other option that I knew how to do and liked to do was art. And so I originally wanted to do concept or I originally wanted to do art and I didn't know where to go with it. Cause I mean, this dates us and it makes it, I think people don't get it, but like YouTube didn't have everything yet. You know, like we didn't have the internet where I get connection to artists and learn what kind of job I could get as an artist, like you can do now at like.
Meet Chum, the adorably deadly hammerhead shark creation from Pocket Salsa and Toys on Tap that has come from the depths to join your toy shelf.
Sharks! Hey, get out of the water! Sharks!
He can be found in the wild later this year in several different blank colors, and in some cases, rarer painted versions of Chum can be found. This chubby little guy comes in at 4 inches tall with one point of articulation.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
He is the perfect mix of cute and deadly.
I am never going back in the water.
Don't miss out on your chance to capture one of these little guys before they're gone.
14. I didn't know what to do, so I went to graphic design. I was like, all right, well, I make illustrations for my albums. I draw, so graphic design sounds good. And that was the first thing that my mom could think of, because, again, she didn't know where to push me in art. They're not artists. So we're like, all right, well, magazine, right? So then I went to school for that, hated it, but I went in for that for a while. But when I went to that art school, I met people that were going for illustration. So then I jumped to illustration. Then I found out there was no work in illustration really. But illustration led me to something called entertainment design. And I had never heard about that before. And entertainment design sent me to the Pasadena Art Center, finally got into that school. And I stayed there and I learned what it was to be a professional artist, basically, like what that meant. And I used to actually fight the idea of wanting to do cartoons. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a realistic, taken seriously, you know? So I learned how to paint people. I learned how to paint realistically. I tried to copy everyone else in that kind of realm, and then it just didn't fulfill it. And so I just gave in and started drawing silly and weird, fun stuff the way that I used to when I was in the band. And that led me to learning that I could work for cartoons and doing background design, which is what I was in for a lot of years, just doing backgrounds for animated shows. And it was great. So like, it was like a lot of stumbling. Like I guess some people, I fail really good. Like I fail upward, you know, like in finding what I want to do, I just fail upward.
Yeah.
Because I fail so often, one of them's going to work.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I hate the fact that like we are older than YouTube. That already sucks to say out loud. 2004, 2005, when YouTube like first comes on, it's just used for stupid videos. Like it wasn't, there's no
skating videos. It was the best thing you found was skating videos and the fail videos. Those were all on there, but and it was then, just funny.
And it was like that kind of stuff. And then dumb E-bombs world stuff that would get on YouTube. And it's like, there's no like, it wasn't a resource, and now it's like everything I could ever want is on there. And so it's kind of impressive that people do that. And I think there's something too about, you said it in passing, but it probably means a lot more than just a little, like you wanted to find purpose, and that like drives people to do, like that's almost a form of desperation, because you want to give to the world, you want to give to your life, and you found art, which is awesome, and like failed upward and found where you needed to be. So how long from graduation and all that stuff before, like, because you're the Space Boy brand as a whole has an interesting dynamic, and I really want to talk to you about it to see if it's like planned. And so how long before or after graduation and all that stuff to the point where you start doing Space Boy-esque stuff?
It was a bit, actually, because I was really, really happy and just working.
Yeah,
I was really happy that I had somehow tricked a system where when I draw funny pictures, you give me money. Like, I thought that was crazy. You know, like, I got to draw and I got paid to draw. So yeah. I just kind of lived in that for a long time. I didn't need more. But, you know, no matter what, everything becomes work. And I started getting that drive against wanting to do more stuff, wanting to draw my own stuff again, instead of drawing everyone else's work. And I had drawn Space Boy maybe like 4 years, four or five years. I was drawing Space Boy for a job, actually. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get work and I needed a character to do these space backgrounds to try and show that I can come up with a theme and all that kind of stuff. And so I came up with Space Boy, and he's named Space Boy because I'm just really bad at naming things. So I was like, all right, so he's a space kid and he's Space Boy. And then I wrote it with an I, and I thought it was funny. You remind me of being a hardcore kid writing things wrong.
Yeah.
So I stuck with it, and I drew it for a few backgrounds, for a few concept pieces, and I was done. Then COVID hit, and I was losing my mind because I'm a big extrovert, and being inside of my apartment by myself, I was losing it. So I was like, all right, I'm going to pull from some old stuff. I'm going to start learning how to do 3D because I like sculpting with clay.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to sculpt digitally and just find a new platform, find a new medium. And so it was around really 2020 that I really leaned into Space Boy, because I started realizing people were just kind of reacting to the drawing and the character and the design. And I liked drawing them because it was fun. And then I started doing 3D and sculpting him. And that's kind of where it all began, because one of my friends who does 3D printing was also bored during COVID and reached out and was like, hey, let me print it. And I was like, print it? He's like, yeah, I can 3D print it. Like, let me try and make a mold. Let me do all this. I need a project to do on board. And so I sent him the file. And next thing you know, the first iteration of Space Boy was like physical, and it like lit something inside me that I didn't even know that I needed.
Yeah.
That was kind of the beginning of I need to make toys.
The interesting dynamic in how you create, it starts out. So for every artist, I scroll back and I try to find out everything I can. It's like you start out with these types of animations with Space Boy, and then the illustrations come. And then there is like shirt designs and sweatshirt designs that look like streetwear. Like the design of that Space Boy is insanely good. I don't know who, if you did it or someone, like,
yeah,
good job.
Thank you.
Almost this like dissected look, part of his helmet and stuff. And it's an incredible, and even the way the pictures are shot look like a streetwear brand. And so it's like, I'm glad to have picked up on it and seen. And then it starts with like moving a little bit more towards toys. So this progression, tell me about the progression from like slow animation with him. And then mm-hmm. we start like, are you trying to figure out what you want him to look like? Are you just testing him in different areas? What was going on?
Well, there were, it's cool you picked up on that, because there was a moment in time with Space Boy. I'm a stubborn person. I'm a stubborn artist, all right? So when I first made Space Boy, I didn't want it to veer into animation, actually. The GIFs were just because I wanted people to get used to him. So I was creating those little GIFs, those pixelized version of him. But like, I didn't want it to be like, oh, you're making a character. Are you starting on the animation? Are you starting them, trying to make a cartoon? Do you have a script? Like, I already work in animation. So I wanted it to be a brand. Like, that was my goal, was can I go the opposite route where when people make toys, they go toys because they want animation, or they make an animation and then they make toys, right? Like, you make the character, you make the thing, and then you make merch. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make merch first and just dive right into brand. Like, I wanted a brand, and I love all the hype clothes and all of those kind of, that all branding that like clothing gets into. Like, I love it. My whole wardrobe. So like, I wanted to be part of that and kind of just make it for myself. And at the time, I was working, you know, pretty heavily where I can afford to just kind of put a lot of money aside just to make my stuff,
yeah,
like to invest in me, right? There was a lot of, again, you're on my age. So like, there's a lot of talk of like, well, you're making money now, you got to invest. This is like before, you got to invest in something. You got to invest in something. This is, you want to invest in real estate? I'm like, not really. Like,
no,
like, that's not my thing. Do you want to invest in this? I'm like, no. Like, and then I went to, sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit, but it's a good story. But then I went to New York and I met a friend out there, and he's also an artist, and he's a tattoo artist. And we were talking about like that, like people are getting on me about where to invest my money. And we both kind of realized we should invest in us, you know, like, why don't we invest in us, like an idea, and try to build something. He started working on a tattoo shop and I started working on Space Boy. Just like, we started, instead of investing in that, invest in our thing. And it's a big risk because, you know, like it's how much you put in and everything. But that was kind of my driving force. And my initial plan, like I said earlier, was to make a brand. And so Space Boy had a light story, which was he's a android boy sent out to different cartoon universes to collect information. That story was built so I could draw him in a bunch of different ways,
yeah, and
design him in a bunch of different ways. So the pixel version, the more toony version, the way I draw him now, each one exists in the Space Boy universe. And it really was just an excuse for me to draw him in a bunch of ways, because I also get tired of drawing one thing, mm-hmm, you know? So I tried to design him so if I change him up, it's still him, because the design elements are pretty strong. So,
yeah, I mean, and it's like, to have done that is so smart from the beginning, to really like open up. I think sometimes artists, whether intentionally or not intentionally, they like, no, he has to be drawn this way, he has to be this specific thing, but then it like pigeonholes an artist, and that seems so difficult when that happens. And so you chose to invest. That seems like the millennial way, like to invest in ourselves and try to figure out what we want to do. That's why we all settled on toys or the toy podcast.
Yep.
And so it's crazy that is true, because it's true in all of our lives. When you were designing the backstory for Space Boy, the idea that he's just out there gathering information all over, did you want, like, that's very different than the classic like evil versus good style. And so what made you settle on that instead of going the traditional route?
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 inch. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
Well, originally, like, it wasn't meant to be much of a story, mm-hmm, to keep people from telling me that I should animate it, right? Like, it was this push and pull of not wanting people to be like, oh, just to make a great story. I just wanted it to feel ways that I designed things and ways that I drew things. So, like the clothing, my reason whenever I draw something for a shirt or a hoodie or the windbreaker that I made was it explains the story without telling the stories. So the first windbreaker I made showed that he was an android, because I did the whole blown out, split up view of him. And then another one I did, I started putting different added parts to kind of like, again, explain his story without explaining it. So that was my reasoning for making clothing versus the toys. Every time I made a new version, I wanted it to be another variant from a different universe. So it would challenge me to kind of change up the shape language and change the design. So that was really the base of the story. But that ended up changing, because as I leaned into it and as I just gave in to the fact that I do like cartoons, there is more of a story now, you know, where there is a little bit more of an evil force, which is Space God, that I've recently been posting about more. So I finally opened up the world after 30 years of like new characters.
Yeah.
And they all have very basic names: Space Girl, Space God, Space Boy.
Yeah.
Very, very basic. But I finally opened it up later. But at the time, I think I was just fighting the urge and the outside suggestions to make more of it. I just needed just enough of a story.
Yeah. And then you started designing toys and getting them printed, and they are, like, from what I can see, most of them don't have articulation. They're like desk sit-upons or whatever you'd call it. And I love that. There's something about a toy that just sits there and I don't have to play with it. And then you go to your first designer con. So like, you're just head first into all this stuff. So tell me about the progression of getting imprinted, figuring out colors and all that, and then jumping right into designer con.
So I had been helping a friend who also does a few figures, has her own brand, and I used to help. I was her booth babe, you know, like I should be there to help. So I used to help her a lot, and I took as much as I could to learn from her, because I didn't want to start having booths at ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
Not with the fact that like I knew how to research and pay attention and take as much information as I can. And I kind of learned that from my buddy when he was doing a tattoo shop. He worked for tattoo places and he took everything that he learned and he started his shop, but he had put so much work in before he'd even started. And that mm-hmm. was with me with the booth. Was I wanted to go in, but like look like I'd been doing it for a few years already. So I'd taken everything I learned, and then my first designer con, the first toy was resin cast, because I didn't know where to make toys yet. Mm-hmm. I just knew how to 3D print and I knew how to do resin. And I have my own personal hot take on just having 3D prints versus resin versus toys.
Yeah.
I can't sell a 3D print as a toy. It just doesn't work in my head. I just can't. But I could do resin cast. Like mm-hmm. that, for some reason, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So I finally found someone that would do a whole resin cast for me. I had all the parts that would connect. I hand painted all of them. I think I did like 20 hand painted customs. And that was my first designer con, was showcasing that one. And the design was very different than what it is now. But it was at that designer con that I met people that were excited about Space Boy that told me where they get their toys made.
Mm.
And so I was finally starting to get connections. I was finally starting to get into the toy community. Because as you know, the toy community is not that big.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty small, but like they're really helpful.
Yeah.
Like once you're in, you're in. And it's not like a click thing. It's not like it's like people want to help. Like I've had nothing but help along the way.
Yeah.
And have tried to do the same, where I don't do this whole gatekeeping nonsense. Like, you want information, I give it to you. I don't care. You can have it. Like, join, because it's the one community that I found that still feels like, I mean, even back to when I was in my band, where it's like genuinely people making what they want with no one above them telling them what to do.
Yeah.
You know, so we get these really good toys that would only exist because people can make them themselves. They don't have somebody telling them, well, that's not gonna sell, that's been this, that's been that. Nah, that's their work.
Yeah.
You know, so I really, really appreciated that when I went to my first designer con, and that just added to the fire and the addiction of being part of this community.
Yeah. I mean, tell me about jumping into that designer con. You're at your booth, you have your stuff set up. I mean, booth setup is like a design process in and of itself.
Yeah.
And some people do it really well. Some people just have a table and have really good work, and that works for them. And so tell me about like choosing that kind of stuff. And also, because you find yourself in art, his colors are so specific and they don't really change based off of even the design of who Space Boy is. Tell me how you chose those colors, and then kind of those things, like the design element side of Space Boy and the booth.
Yeah, so I am a big person of like, I'll do mock-ups of everything and anything that I'm going to make, but I'll make it look real. Like I'm doing it right now. I'm making a booth setup for this designer con, and I just rendered it all out and I have it done like on Photoshop. So I know what it should look like. And now I'm trying to build it out to kind of match it. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing with that first designer con where I designed out the booth, did a full mock-up, and then I tried to match. I based it off of a lot of pictures that I had taken when I went to, I mean, I'm an avid goer to designer con to begin with. So I looked at all the pictures that were there, the booths that were doing well. I went to Anime Expo and looked at all of those ones. Again, asked my friend who does booths, like, what are key things that help? And I tried to design all of that in.
Yeah.
I also tried to do something really different. The very first convention I did, instead of having a banner like everyone else has or a backing like everyone else had, I had a gigantic rug of Face Boy just because it looked odd and looked different and made people stop.
Yeah.
And again, I trying to lean into this is a brand. So if this is a brand, then I'm going to really face the branding. And branding is, you know, the shape language, the font, the colors, and all of that. And with Space Boy, the colors the colors came from fashion, actually. The colors came from, I can't remember anymore, but it was a fashion spread of like different color combos that like I really, really, really loved. And I wanted to bring that into my design. Because I was really inspired by fashion at the time. And again, I was leaning into brand versus anything else. Because the shape language is straight up 2000s, anything from the 2000s. That's the shape language of him. But the colors, I was trying to pull from fashion wear, which is where the orange and the blue and the yellow, that like really strong combo, like I just loved it. And then I kind of realized that that's like half my closet. They got a bunch of yellow and blue and... And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. It's all innate. It's all subconsciously there. So that's where his colors came from. And I've stuck with that strongly. I've tried to divert a little sometimes. And I found that people are really gravitate towards the original colorway. So I don't divert much anymore. Yeah. But in the early stages, I would try to change little things. But it's like I accidentally happened upon his variant, his main variant, and I don't change it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, with him and this whole design, you hand paint, correct?
Originally I hand painted them. Now I do some customs, but now they're all produced. A lot of the vinyl, the actual soft vinyl that I have, those ones are produced. But I still print a lot of blank ones, so I can do hand painting because I love hand painting them.
Awesome. And then going back to Designer Con this year, that's an exciting thing. I get to like meet everyone in person. You're one of them now. And, are you like, do you have, cause we're kind of coming off the tail end of the Kickstarter right now and headed into Designer Con. How are we feeling about the Kickstarter? How are we feeling about Designer Con being, like a week away?
A little bit of me wishes I would have waited a little longer to start the Kickstarter because I kind of, for some reason, mismatched with that in DesignerCon. Would have liked to have them overlap. Okay. But with that said, I don't know, surprisingly feeling pretty positive, even though the Kickstarter didn't make it. And I kind of alluded to that on Instagram and posting about it because I didn't want it to be negative because, like I said earlier, my life is failing upwards. So when I messed up on something, it's what I take from it. And the Kickstarter was super eye-opening. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of even doing advertisement, the idea of reaching out, the idea of expanding your reach and the community of that, how to plan ahead, like with how much, because like I planned everything I thought I needed until I launched it. And there was so much that I didn't know that I hadn't done that I started doing in a rush. So that month of the Kickstarter was like every day from like 7 to 11 was just making videos, posting ads, drawing pictures, doing this, changing the design, adding this, emailing that person, like a whole month of just really intense work of trying to get that figured out. But I learned a lot. Yeah. And I also met a lot of people. being on here. Yeah. It's kind of like that too. I also reached out to you guys, and I reached out a lot and met a lot of people that were very helpful and very like wanted to do what they could, and to a complete stranger. Like, I hadn't met them yet. There are a lot of people I knew, but there's a lot of people I didn't, you know? So there's a lot of positives that come from it. And I think that just the attempt is worth it, because if you attempt it with everything you got, you're going to get something out of it. So did I get the Kickstarter made and the blind boxes done? No. But I did learn that if I do it again, what am I going to do better? And I bet you I'll do it the second time.
Yeah.
You know? And then since I was done, I've been excited for DesignerCon, you know, since the last DesignerCon. I love DesignerCon. So since that was done, I was able to refocus all my time now on preparing for this upcoming DCon and being able to talk to people and still have the mock-ups from the Kickstarter and talk to people about it there and build up hype about it, so I can do something again, you know, in the next couple months.
Yeah. I mean, tell me about the blind boxes as a whole. I mean, blind boxes aren't something that I've ever really bought. I have a couple, but I know that it's like basically the same design, different paint masks get made for it, and it just keeps. And then there's exclusives and those types of things.
Basically, yeah. It's like toy gambling, you know?
Yeah. Which is
addicting for a reason.
Absolutely. And with the Kickstarter, I'm assuming already have mock-ups and stuff from the factory, already have molds, like all these things that get produced. Mm. When doing a blind box, you kind of have to settle on specific things. So how were you choosing different colorways? How were you choosing things that deserve to be in that?
Yeah, so the theme kind of built itself where I love when people see Space Boy and the first thing it says, it reminds me of blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, people will say that a lot of times and I'm like, what? Like, what does it remind you of? Because that's kind of his goal. He's kind of like there. He feels like he belongs from that era, but he doesn't. You know, he's a brand new toy. But I like that he belongs in that era that reminds people of something. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of nostalgia was really strong in my head when I was working on the blind box. And I wanted originally to just create one design that can sit anywhere. And so that's why he's sitting. Like, I just wanted him to be able to sit anywhere and just like be like a little placeholder, little spot in your desk, little spot in the car. Like, I wanted it to be anywhere. And I want the design to be strong enough where I can mess with it with the colorways. Cause after doing a lot of custom shows, I was actually surprised how half the artists that I gave it to redesigned him in the one, you know, in the one thing I did just with painting.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to try and do the challenge of, can I make 9 different Space Boys look really different being in the same pose and painting just different colorways on each one? So that was kind of the thought that I had going into it. And then the idea of nostalgia was there for so long that I'm like, well, I want this to be fun and interesting to people that don't know the character. Why not dip into the inspirations of where Space Boy came from? So right. The inspirations of the stuff that I pulled from, to kind of give homage to that and show like, this is kind of where he came from, but also look at all these different, you know, different IPs that he can be, because the story was that he went to these universes and, you know, and did the research, and now he looks like them, you know, like he assimilates into their world. So that was where the ideas came from for that. And I just left packaging. So I started working on it as a whole, the package, leaning into that and leaning into the toys and the theme of it all.
Yeah. Packaging is one of my favorite things, like with how brands get creative and describe the box. Cause I think it's like a barrel sized that had, was it like an octagon or a hexagon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation! Hooray! We're saved, DOV2! Limited edition custom artist-made action figures and DKE toys!
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures!
DKE!
That means they fit perfectly when they're all in a bigger box. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then choosing the color and design of the boxes is incredible. In trying to vet or find a factory to do this kind of stuff, I mean, you have to find a factory that can do boxes, paint, casting, or whatever they call it there. Like, how did you do that? How did you figure out that this was the one you wanted to work with?
I am very lucky that I have a partner that does that part for me.
Yeah.
Because she's very, very good at finding the manufacturers and the connections and does that part of the haggling and everything that you have to do in order to do the business side of it that I am not good at. You tell me the price and I'm like, okay. And I don't fight for more. I don't research. I don't do all of that. But she's very, very good at it. So I'm very lucky that she does that for me. And what it is really being able to it's just research.
Yeah.
Researching all the manufacturers. Manufacturers are willing to work with each other so that you don't have to find one place that does everything. Instead, you'll find one place that does the mold, and we'll get all the toys done. Then they'll send all of those, and then they'll do the packaging at another place, and the packaging place will send that over. And then I was making holographic cards that would be inside as well originally. So then I made those at a different place, and they would send them over, and one place would package everything, and then send it over to the shipping place and get it over here. So there was a lot of like puzzle pieces that I made sure I knew down to the price and the date that I would get everything done if I managed to get the Kickstarter done before I even launched a Kickstarter. And that's not what everyone does, apparently. Like, some people just leave it straight up the idea that's on paper before they even do that. Everyone chooses, you know, pick and chooses how much they want, but I needed to know that I could do it. So that's why I made the mold and proved that the toy looked good and it felt good. So I knew what people would be getting would be quality before I sold it. So I'm not okay with just selling an idea, even though that's smarter on a business side. I just couldn't, like, I can't. I need to know it's good. Because if I got all their money and then I got this toy and I'm like, it's okay, I'd feel horrible saying that to everybody, you know? Yeah. So.
And it feels like you did it the right way. I mean, doing all the work and figuring out the factories and all that stuff seems way better than just saying, like, this is the possibility of what you might get. Like, that sucks. Like, that's I never want to see, like, I'm more than likely not going to support a Kickstarter or anything like that if I can't even see what the finished product will look like. Mm-hmm. And I think doing that kind of work, and then especially with blind boxes, like, there's a lot of stuff that's happening from all these, like you said, all these different areas where these factories are producing. And I'm assuming from China. I love working with people on Alibaba and stuff in China. I love it so much. I went to FedEx Ship and Print, and I made these like simple little book things that like hold a sticker inside, and it has like information about the podcast on each flip. And FedEx was like, like $150 to find the cutter that will do it, and then like $1,000, and we need you to order like 2,000 of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not ever how this is happening. That's crazy that you said that to me. And then just like spending a couple days on Alibaba, and someone was like, for $79, we'll get you 500 of them in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
And so it's like, awesome. Yeah. Let's do that. So I do love that kind of stuff and working with factories and stuff. So as you have exited it, have you already made plans to do a second one following Designer Con or in 2025? Like, when's kind of the goal here?
I think what I realized after doing this Kickstarter and trying to do something as big as a blind box, because even with how cheap I was able to make it for, it was still very expensive, right? Yeah. Like, the goal was 8,000, And that was to make 9 different toys, all the packaging, all everything, get it shipped. And even then, I was running it by some other toy friends that I have that already are making stuff. And I was like, does that number seem right? And they're like, how are you making it for that much? Mm-hmm. Like, how are you? How, and that was the research for my partner. I was able to find that funding to be able to truly make everything. But it's still a lot of money. Like, I think I was able to raise $3,500 with 54 people. And I'm proud of that number because I'm proud of 54 people that wanted to fund me and help me. But I would have needed, you know, another 50, another 100. I would have needed it to snowball. So instead of that, I know that I can make another toy, one figure for half of that. I can make another figure for $3,000. For $3,000, I can make something new. And that's where I'm going to pivot. And this is where, again, that failing upward is. I learned a lot from that last one. I also gained a lot of recognition and followers again just from trying to run the Kickstarter. And now I'm realizing I only have one figure. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's make another figure, one figure, because I know how to do that. I've already have a lot of practice in that. And so now I'm working on the two new designs of Space Girl and Space God, and I'm going to run a Kickstarter later on to fund that. Okay. And I'll make another toy, one toy. And then I'll do all the little things extra that I know how to make now for the extra rewards. But
yeah,
I'm going to leave blind boxes for when I've built an even better community. So maybe even in the next couple of years. But I think blind boxes, I went a little too quick.
Yeah. I mean, when you, since you did all the research, when you would have gotten them, how much would each one have sold for from you?
I would have been able to sell each blind, just one single blind box for $12.
Yeah.
Like normal pricing. And then selling the whole set of the 9 for $90. So it would have been fine. It would have worked out. So where people weren't paying a lot, because that's the other part, is like, I don't want to have to price everything super high. Even my toy, I made sure to keep it under $70. That's what I would pay for something that size. Mm-hmm. And still feel respectful to the artist and to myself. So I try not to price it up to make people pay for the fact that I couldn't find a manufacturer that would make it affordable.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think pricing is probably always the thing that eats artists alive, because you're trying to figure out, I mean, there's so many factors in pricing, and there's so many things that go with where the economy is, what decon switching locations is going to play a factor in how much people sell.
Yeah.
There's so much stuff. So, but with DesignerCon coming, do you have anything new that you're like, this is what's going to be here, or something that you're really excited to present at DesignerCon?
Yeah. So I finally have new products. It's been like a whole year of running on the same stuff. And I finally have new products, which will be, I have a brand new keychain plushie for, I'm calling them the Space Babies. Basically just little tiny space boys that are super adorable, but they're small. They're angry and they're just adorable. I'm going to have those. I'm going to have some resin space girls. So I'll be my first time showing a different character, which will be at this. And I'm running against the clock to get a Space God resin sculpt out as well. And those will all be hand-painted.
Awesome.
So I'll be showcasing those. I have acrylic keychains that are basically little Tamagotchis with space boys in them. So they move. What else? New stickers of new characters, new pins of new characters. I'm basically expanding this DesignerCon. This DesignerCon, the universe is expanding, and I have new characters. So whereas for the last 2-3 years, it's just been a lot of Space Boy, I'm finally expanding it out.
That's awesome. And that's a big jump to go from one. Do you think, I mean, with all the branding you've done with Space Boy, do you think that adding the new characters is going to impact the idea of Space Boy as a brand?
I think yes. I think adding new characters and adding to the lore, I had to, just like when I was stubborn and wanted to do realistic stuff and didn't want to do blah, blah, blah. And then I got into cartoons. I think it's the same route I think I seem to always do that. It's the same route now with Space Boy, where I've given into the fact that he would work well as an animation. And so I actually started working on a story for him. I actually have an animation, animated short that we're working on right now to be able to put up and continue that. I built up the entire world, so I know where he comes from now. I know what his real intent is. I know the evil driving force that is running Space Boy, and Space Girl's got her own story. So I'm really building the lore now, which is changing the brand, where if you would have asked me a couple of years ago what it was, I would just be stubborn and stick with the fact that he is just a brand, where now it's more of a Space Boy universe. And I'm building out the whole world and animations, little comics, all the things are coming out. So I've given in to that question that's usually always asked: is he a cartoon? He might be.
Yeah,
he might be.
Netflix, we know you're listening. Come on, I'm pumped. I can't wait to see you at DesignerCon to see all this stuff, and so I'm really excited. The last part of the podcast is just a moment where you can plug everything.
We're at the end already?
I know. You get to plug everything and where people can get Space Boy stuff and merch and how they get in touch with you, how they support you, all those things. So please plug away.
Yeah. So right now, if you look at the Space Boy Dega on pretty much any platform, that is what it's under, Space Boy Dega, like the Space Bodega with an I. So that you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on TikTok, you could find the www.spaceboydega.com for the store. Mm-hmm. I have all of that running. I respond pretty quickly and easily on Instagram. I'm pretty much on that all the time, and that's where I do a lot of my stuff, even sales, just straight on there. I'm going to be, like I've alluded to, I'm working on the world of Space Boy. So I'm working on the story. We're working on the first animated short, which will hopefully be out in like a couple months. We're working on it now. I've got an animator doing animations. She's amazing. I'm working on all the backgrounds like I used to for work, but I'm doing it for this. And we're building out the story. Hopefully you'll love it. And hopefully that will gain even more recognition, you know, from everybody with that. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Yeah, this is fun.